Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevate Your Energy Radio. I'm Evelyn Lambrecht from ElevateYourEnergy.com and Elevate Your Energy on Facebook. Today I'm interviewing digestive expert Dr. Liz Lipsky. The book we're focusing on today is called Digestion Connection, the Simple Natural Plan to Combat Diabetes, Heart Disease, Osteoporosis, Arthritis, Acid Reflux, and more. It is seriously a Bible of digestive health. And as you can tell by the title, yes, we'll be talking about some common digestive issues, but also covering some issues that you might not have thought of are related to a problem with the digestive system. So if you or someone you know has migraines, fibromyalgia, any kind of autoimmune disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, any of the things I mentioned in the title, please pass this show along and recommend Liz's book to them. You might seriously save someone's life. I also want to give a shout out to my friend George Bryant from The Civilized Caveman. He was on the show a few months ago, and his cookbook, The Paleo Kitchen, with co-author Julie Bauer, comes out today. So I wanted to pass that along. That's called The Paleo Kitchen. Congratulations, you guys. On my website, I have a free guide called 5 Days to More Energy. You can download that for free at ElevateYourEnergy.com. Last week, if you missed the show, I interviewed Dr. Tirona Lodog and learned so much from her. She's a phenomenal speaker. We talked about her book, Healthy at Home, and she shared remedies you can make at home for colds, coughs, stress, and more. Most of the time, it's not necessary to take drugs for little issues like that, so you can check that show out on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes. Also next week, I'm interviewing Dr. Lise Alschuler. We'll be talking about cancer prevention and thriving after cancer treatment. So moving on to today's guest. Dr. Liz Lipsky is the Director of Academic Development for the Nutrition and Integrative Health Programs at Maryland University of Integrative Health. She has been working in the fields of nutrition, holistic health, herbology, and lifestyle management for more than 30 years. Prior to joining Maryland University of Integrative Health, she served as Director of Doctoral Studies and Educational Director at Hawthorne University. She has been extensively published in many academic journals and is the author of 4 books, including Digestive Wellness, which is in its 4th edition, and The Digestion Connection. Dr. Lipsky speaks nationally and internationally and is on faculty at the Institute for Functional Medicine. She received her doctorate in clinical nutrition from the Union Institute with a specialization in functional medicine, is board certified in clinical nutrition and holistic nutrition, and is a certified nutrition specialist. Liz, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's so great to be here. And wow, you have had some great guests in the past, and next week people are in for a treat listening to Lise.
Yeah, she's great. I saw her talk at the conference we were at, the National Association of Nutrition Professionals Conference.
Yeah, she's really one of the, you know, handful of experts in the area of integrative cancer therapies, and such a wonderful woman at the same time.
I'm looking forward to it. So Liz, can you share how you got so interested in nutrition and tell us a little bit more about your journey?
Sure. I think that I got interested in nutrition really because my mom loved cooking, and we used to watch cooking shows together, and from the time I was really small, I would cook with her and watch her cook, and meals, family meals, were where everything happened, and on Sundays, all of the relatives would come, and they would sit around the dining room table for hours and hours talking about each other and family and fighting about politics and talking about finances. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, world peace was going to happen at that table, either that or world war. And it was just such an important part of family. Then when I was in college, I was studying herbal medicine, and I started reading Ewell Gibbon's books, Stalking the Wild Asparagus and Stalking the Blue Oyster, and I just kind of shifted my focus back to food when I realized that the word diet comes from the Greek, and it means a manner of living or a way of life, and our diet in the broadest sense is everything we take in, and that's how we move our bodies and our relationships and the TV shows we watch and the things we read and and the food that we eat. And it seemed like all of that was so much more foundational to health than just studying herbs. So that's kind of what began my journey.
Very cool. So I love your book. It's definitely, like I said, an indispensable manual for everything related to the digestive system. But why did you write this one after all the other editions of Digestive Wellness?
Ah, well, that's actually a really simple answer. This is a 4.1 version of Digestive Wellness, and it has only about 50 pages difference and that I added to it. And honestly, I got a call one day from Rodale Books, and they said McGraw-Hill just sold us the direct marketing rights for Digestive Wellness, and we'd like you to add some content to it so we can say that it's a new book. So both of them are really good books.
Perfect.
And
I think Digestion Connection is a little harder to find than Digestive Wellness.
It's a lot harder to find because it's only sold through Rodale. And Digestive Wellness you can find anywhere.
Perfect. So in the book you set out to answer, what if imbalances in the digestive system cause not only digestive symptoms, complaints, and disease, but also symptoms, imbalances, and disease throughout the body? Can you talk about this a little bit more?
Sure. The reason that we eat in the first place is to nourish every single cell in the body. So if our digestive system isn't working right, then we're going to feel tired. Our mental and emotional well-being is going to be compromised, and we're going to be moody, maybe depressed, maybe anxious. In fact, some of the earliest nutrition insufficiencies show up as depression and lack of energy and anxiety, which we seem to have a lot of in our culture. And also things like inability to concentrate and focus, because the brain uses so much of our energy. But if we're not getting the nourishment to our cells, then pretty much nothing works right. And so, you know, your skin doesn't heal. Your neurotransmitters aren't made because you're not actually able to break down proteins into the right amino acids and then reformulate them. Because you don't have all the nutrients that are needed, like tyrosine and zinc and B vitamins. And so there's just so many things that break down. Bones don't get rebuilt. Muscles feel weak and tired. And so digestion is really the underlying key for how we build our body. You know, they always say you are what you eat. And we are what you eat, but we're also not only what we eat, but what we can digest. And what we can take into our bloodstream in the right form, and we're also, then we've got to get it to the cells in a usable fashion, and then we need to excrete it. And so, you know, digestion can break down on any of those levels. So somebody with diabetes, they can't get the glucose into the cell, or somebody who's constipated can't excrete the waste, and so the wastes end up recirculating, and we end up pulling back in not only water back into our body, which is a pretty good thing, but we also pull back in hormones and things that we've gotten rid of. So what people might not realize is that when you're chronically constipated, you increase your risk for breast cancer and other hormone-dependent cancers in both men and women. And that's why I'm really so fascinated with digestion, is because it's the key to health, and at least a third to 40% of us have some kind of digestive issue every couple months. The other thing that we're starting to learn about is the gut microbiome, which I think you have other questions about. And it's the gut microbiome is comprised of viruses and yeast and fungi and bacteria, and it weighs about 3.5 to 4 pounds. It's the size of our liver, and it's the most metabolically active organ in our body. It runs our metabolism and determines whether we're fat or thin. It affects whether we're happy or depressed. It makes B vitamins and vitamin K for us. It modulates our immune function and does so many more different things. And many of the things that we do in our lives disrupt that, And when it's disrupted, then we don't feel well. So again, you know, digestion for me is such a key place to begin with health.
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned constipation, I guess we can't talk about digestive wellness without talking about poop, right? So
right.
Why should you consider testing bowel transit time, and how do you test for that?
Okay, well, the first thing people should know is that even if you're having a bowel movement every single day, what you ate yesterday might not be what's coming out, because the average American person has a bowel transit time that's somewhere between 2 and 3 days. And what's optimal is that when we eat something, the waste ought to come out of us within 18 to 24 hours, something like that. And what's considered to be normal in kind of medical circles is somewhere between 3 bowel movements a day to 3 bowel movements a week. And that's a pretty big range. What concerns me is if somebody's having three bowel movements a week, then what's happening is that stool's sitting there for a very long time, and it tends to get hard and dry. It's harder to have an easy bowel movement. Your wastes have been sitting in you for a long time, and that can be inflammatory throughout your body. And it's also uncomfortable. Some people don't feel right when they're only having 3 bowel movements a week. And believe it or not, I've had clients in the past who've only had like a bowel movement once a week or once every 2 weeks, or they never had a bowel movement without using a laxative. So it's a big problem. It affects a large percentage of the population. And people generally feel better when they have regular bowel movements. So one of the simple things you can do at home that's a fun experiment, and some of us do it by accident, is you can eat a lot of tomatoes, or you can take a tablespoon or so of sesame seeds, or you can eat beets, or you can take some charcoal tablets, and you can see when you see a change in your stool. So you eat them, and for example, tomato seeds or sesame seeds, you would see undigested seeds in your stool, and you want to see when's the first time you see them and when's the last time you see them. And then you also can use beets, although this doesn't work with everyone, but for most people, you can eat a big pile of beets, and a day or two later, you'll see that your stool is red, and it's not blood, it's the color in the beets. And other people can use charcoal tablets, which also have the added benefit of mopping up gas. So you take maybe 10 charcoal tablets, and you wait to see when you have a black stool. And if it comes through you really fast, then your bowel transit time, like 12 hours or less, then you know that you're actually not absorbing all of your nutrients, because your food is moving through your transit time way too fast. If you find that your stool transit time is somewhere between 18 and 24 hours, maybe even a little bit longer, you're doing exactly the right thing. And if it's longer than that, then you start thinking about, what can I do to increase my stool transit time? And for constipation, there's so many things that are beneficial. The average person doesn't get enough fiber, so that's a really logical place to start, is eat more root vegetables and eat more whole grains. And beans are such a good source of fiber, so adding some kidney beans to a salad or having hummus with vegetables as part of your lunch or for a snack. So anyway, you can just start with fiber. Also, drinking plenty of water is really important for keeping those stools easy. And then some people just like to take a couple tablespoons of flax or chia seeds to increase fiber, but it also increases some of the essential fatty acids that also help us not be constipated. So you can put that, you know, sprinkle it over cereal or oatmeal, or put it in a smoothie, and that seems to work really well for some people. And then if you're still constipated, one of the things I like to do is ask people to increase their magnesium intake by taking some magnesium supplements, and kind of keep increasing their magnesium until they have loose stools or until they have explosive stools, which means you took really too much, and then kind of back down from that. According to government statistics, about 70% of us are magnesium insufficient because we don't get enough in our diet. And so often when I'm working with people, or I should say in the past because I'm not seeing clients anymore, but so often when I just ask somebody to start taking a few hundred or more milligrams of magnesium every day, they find that their bowels are completely regular. And I know that for me, I need a lot of magnesium, more than I get in my diet, even though I eat a lot of greens and grains. I just need more. And so some of it, you might just need more. And then if that still doesn't work, then I would start considering small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or yeast overgrowth or something a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, last week on the show, Dr. Lodog also talked about magnesium. She needs it so much at higher doses to prevent migraines for her. So there are so many different reasons why we need magnesium.
300 different reasons. The body uses magnesium in 300 different enzyme systems. So some of the important things about magnesium that I love is that you need it to relax your muscles. So if you feel tight, your muscles feel tight and tense, you probably need a little bit more magnesium. We also need it to relax our nervous system. So if you're really irritable or you're anxious all the time, you probably need some more. One of the tip-offs is people who have eyelid twitches or muscle twitches anywhere in their body, or menstrual cramps or foot cramps or cramping anywhere in the body. And another big tip-off for me is when people are really sensitive to noise. So I used to ask people, clients, say, does traffic really bother you? Do lawnmowers or loud TVs really bother you? And most people would just kind of look at me like, huh? But a lot of people go, yeah, I'm really sensitive to noise, and I startle really easily if somebody comes up behind me. And those are all signs that somebody really needs more magnesium.
Mm-hmm. So you helped develop the D-I-G-I-N or dig-in model. How do you say it?
Dig in.
Yeah, dig in, like digging into the digestive system with the Institute for Functional Medicine to assess digestive issues. Can you explain what the acronym stands for and just briefly talk about why each part is important?
I will. I developed this with Patrick Hanaway, and I co-teach it with him and Jerry Mullen and Tom Salt. They're all medical doctors, and I'm the nutritionist on the team. And one day, Patrick and I were sitting in an airport, and he said, I'm beginning to really realize that no matter what your diagnosis is, that there are underlying causes that are really behind it. So, for example, you could be working with somebody who has small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and one person could present that as irritable bowel syndrome, and another person could present that as fibromyalgia, and a third could present that as restless leg syndrome, and a fourth person could present that as interstitial cystitis, which is inflammation in the bladder. And so knowing kind of that, the name of what you've got sometimes isn't so important as the underlying condition. On the other hand, you could have people who have the same condition, and it presents, you could have people who have, same condition, different outcomes. You could have people who have inflammation, and inflammation could show up in different ways. It could show up as inflammatory bowel disease, or it could show up as eczema on your skin or psoriasis, or it could show up as headaches or arthritis. And so it seems more important, rather than kind of diagnosing, which Dr. Sid Baker says we like to name it, blame it, and tame it. And Dr. Mark Hyman says we like to name the ill and give a pill. It's more important to really understand what's going on underneath and what the mechanisms are. And so as Dr. Hanaway and I started talking about it, he said, these are the things I think are underlying it. And then I spent a long time trying to figure out how we could make an acronym that would work with this once we really kind of discussed it. And I kind of like to dig it, but dig in is where we ended up. So here's what it means. First is digestion and absorption. At the beginning of this interview, I said that if you can't actually digest your food, then you're not going to get nourishment to the cells. And so what we find is there are people who have gallbladder issues and they don't break down fats very well. There are people who have low hydrochloric acid in their stomach and they don't digest their protein adequately, which means that we can't use it to make muscle or neurotransmitters or some hormones. There also, when we don't have enough hydrochloric acid, then we have poor absorption of many of our minerals, including iron and calcium. So low hydrochloric acid is something we investigate. We also look to see if somebody have enough digestive enzymes. Are they actually able to digest their food because their pancreas knows when to secrete those enzymes? And so that's the digestion piece. Can you actually digest your food? And moving backwards, so many of us gobble our food down and eat so fast that we make the process of digestion really difficult. So the one, you know, really simple digestive tip is chew your food well and don't wash it down with liquids. You can drink, but don't wash it down. So that's D for dig, for the dig in. The first I stands for intestinal permeability, which is also known as leaky gut syndrome. And the small intestine has a paradoxical function, which is to keep out big molecules and keep them out of our bloodstream, but to allow food molecules that are small and nutrients and other phytonutrients and things that are broken down enough to allow this to pass into the bloodstream. And when we have leaky gut, one of the things that happens is that molecules that are too big to normally pass into the bloodstream come into the bloodstream, and the immune system then has to pick them up and say, well, this is garbage here, because the bloodstream can't digest the food. So we start getting things, we start getting yeast overgrowth because we get fungus and yeast on our foods. We get bacterial overgrowth because bacteria comes in our foods. We bring in parasites on our foods, and all of these can slip into the bloodstream, as well as chemicals on our food, preservatives in our food, and food molecules that are actually too big for the cells to use. And so that's one of the reasons we start getting food sensitivities and food allergies. And those food sensitivities and allergies then lead to systemic issues like psoriasis and eczema and migraines and arthritis and autoimmune conditions and so many other things. So, and mood disorders and depression. So the looking for, is the small intestine intact? Is it leaky, or is it actually working really well? Then the G stands for the gut microbiome, which I started talking about, and that's those 3.5 to 4.5 pounds of microbes that live inside of us. And they modulate our immunity and make vitamins for us and actually talk with our genes. What we're finding out is that what new research has indicated is that there's 10 times more bacteria in your digestive system than cells in your body. And in those bacteria, there's more than, like, if you compare the DNA in the bacteria to human DNA, we have 150 times more bacterial DNA in our gut than we have cellular DNA in our bodies. And it's really easy to upset this balance so that people end up with kind of low-grade bacterial infections or fungal overgrowth or parasites, And when that happens, we don't feel our best. You might have gas and bloating, or you might not. You might have poor energy or whatever. And the other thing about these microbes is that they're continually talking to our own genes and saying, hey, settle down, buddy. You know, there's nothing to be so upset about. Don't, you know, or you're old. It's time for you to actually, die. Or here's some nutrients. You can really be soothed. Or it's time for you to replicate. And so they're always talking to our own DNA. And the more we find out about them, a lot of us are beginning to think that we're just big sacks, like big buses that carry around these microbes. And we think we're smart, but maybe it's just the microbes that are smart. So that's the G for dig in. And then we move to the next I, and the I is about inflammation and the immune system. So we can have inflammation in the digestive system that will cause skin inflammation and brain inflammation and lung inflammation and asthma and cause us to have pain almost anywhere in our body, like fibromyalgia or arthritis. And so we always want to look and say, does somebody have inflammation? Is their immune system overreacting? So for somebody with an autoimmune disease, somebody like, say, Dr. Terry Walls, who had multiple sclerosis, she worked with her diet and with some supplements and with some electrical stimulation and got herself out of a wheelchair because she really corrected her imbalances, and most of all, she corrected her digestive imbalances. So we want to take a look at that. Or somebody who has Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, we want to look at their diet and see what's causing inflammation that they might be eating. We want to look at their lifestyle and their sleep and make sure they're sleeping well. And we want to look at all aspects of their life, and then we want to use soothing foods, soothing supplements to try to bring down inflammation, and sometimes drugs when they're needed. And then the final letter is N, which stands for the nervous system, because we have a nervous system that's actually in our digestive system called the enteric nervous system. And that nervous system is really active. So, for example, we make all of the neurotransmitters that we make in our brain. We make all of those in our digestive system in larger amounts. So, for example, serotonin is a neurotransmitter that we think of that when levels are low, people might be depressed. But what we know is that we make about 80% of the serotonin we need in our gut, and we use it to regulate bowel function, to see if we're actually regular and having normal bowel movements. So there's so many pieces to that. And then the other piece is not only that the digestive system helps regulate the nervous system, but our brain and our gut talk to each other. So I had a client a long time ago who said to me, I only work with 6 people, but every time I have to make a presentation, I get diarrhea before I walk in. And so how many people feel butterflies in their stomach, or they get nervous and they react in a digestive way? And we know that that's really true. So there's a lot of communication between the brain and the digestive system, and we want to make sure that that's all working right too. And so rather than looking at kind of diagnoses, it's good to know if somebody has Crohn's disease or they have irritable bowel syndrome. Those are important things to know, or that they have migraines or arthritis. But it's also really important to know what these things are. So, for example, inflammation, think GERD. Well, there's inflammation there. What's causing that inflammation? Is there a way that we can calm that inflammation down? I've had different clients who they stop eating gluten-containing grains and their GERD just disappears. Another client where we couldn't quite figure it out, and we did food sensitivity testing, and eggs showed up, and she discovered and realized that every time she ate eggs that she had heartburn. It's like, well, some days she would say, you know what, I really feel like an omelet. And maybe she would, you know, take some digestive enzymes along with it to help to see if she could protect herself or some bitters or something, you know. But it was a choice that she made, and at least she knew and understood why she was experiencing that. And so, you know, the whole work that a good nutritionist can do is to really help you explore your own lifestyle, your own body, and what makes you feel better and what makes you feel worse, and to teach you so that you become the expert, because you actually are the expert in how your body works and what makes you feel well. And sometimes it's good to work with a professional who can kind of coach you through it, lead you through it, and the two of you together can really discover what's going on. And then you have more tools to make better decisions about what's going to help you feel your best.
That was an excellent summary. I would like to dig in, a little deeper into some of these things. So you mentioned GERD just now, but what are some other issues where someone might suspect that they have low stomach acid, and how do you increase it naturally?
So low stomach acid, often people will feel like they eat something with protein, especially red meats, and that they sit in their stomach. They just feel like it's a lump in their stomach. We ought to move even meat through our stomach and into our small intestine. It should be broken down well enough in a couple hours that it's completely out of there. And some people report, it just feels like every time I eat red meat, it just sits there like a lump. Or other people say that about dairy products or fish or poultry. So that's a really big tip-off. The other one that you see really commonly is that people burp a lot. And I had a client, many clients, they were just burping. It's like, well, let's try taking some hydrochloric acid and see if it goes away. And I'll often use that as a trial to see if somebody feels better or worse. So a long time ago, I had a young client. She was in her 20s, and she had gotten her diet down to, like, the blandest diet you could ever imagine. And if she ate anything that wasn't bland, she got GERD. And I said, you know, what Dr. Jonathan Wright tells me is that sometimes the symptoms of too much acid look like the symptoms of too little acid. And what he says in his book, Why Stomach Acid is Good for You, is that sometimes what we have is not enough acid, but too much acid in the wrong place, which is in our esophagus, which is where it doesn't belong. And the sphincter that sits between the esophagus and the stomach should be closed most of the time unless food's coming down. But if it's inflamed or irritated, then it can kind of be open a little bit, and you get that reflux of acid back up into our esophagus, which is very irritating. So sometimes I'll actually, like this 20-something client who was on to no foods practically, I said, why don't we just give you a few pills of this, and you just take one with a meal that has protein in it, and let's see how you do. And, of course, she did amazingly well. And then her doctor said, oh, you shouldn't be doing that.
Oh,
you have too much stomach acid. And so she stopped. Anyway, but, you know, she didn't believe her own body. She believed her doctor. Because it is acid, I don't always like to keep somebody on hydrochloric acid supplements for a really long time. There are things that really help with GERD. So I'm going to start with the most basic. And the most basic thing is to just relax more and chew your food and relax when you're eating. I can't tell you how foundational that is for stopping GERD. I had a friend who, and I write about him in Digestion Connection, who came to visit me when I lived in Hawaii, and he was on a sabbatical. And he went to a Zen monastery for a couple weeks, and then he lived with my family for a few weeks on Kauai, and he came with this superhuman-sized bottle of Tums. And after a couple weeks of staying with my family, he'd go down to the beach every day with a book. He'd go for walks. He'd swim. he'd come home and eat with us for dinner and home-cooked meals with, you know, my husband and my kids and I. And pretty soon he didn't have any more heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that. Also, acupuncture can be useful. And then in addition to that, in terms of diet, looking for foods that you're sensitive to can be just brilliant. I've already said that one client, it was gluten-containing grains. Another one, it was eggs. For some people, it could be dairy. So trying to be a sleuth and figuring out, what did I eat that set me off? And often people know. They'll say, oh, coffee does it, or alcohol does it, or sugar does it. So we know. We just like to ignore what we know a lot of times because we like to drink coffee or we like to have a glass of wine or whatever it is. And then drinking licorice tea can be really helpful. It's soothing and can help de-inflame that sphincter muscle that's in between the stomach. Putting some slippery elm or mallow or marshmallow herb into it. They act as demulcents. Eating things like okra, very soothing to the GI tract. And what I'll often have many of my clients do is eat umeboshi plums. They're a fermented, salted plum that seems to be very soothing for GERD. And also I'll use bitters. And lately I've been using, you can use Swedish bitters that you get anywhere. I also really like the Urban Moonshine bitters. I have nothing to do with these companies because they're just really great products. And what the bitters do, again, is they help stimulate your digestive function, help you make more hydrochloric acid. But the main thing to remember is that the making of this hydrochloric acid takes a huge amount of energy. You're taking something that's food and you're turning it into an acid that would burn you if it's on your skin, and you're concentrating it hundreds of thousands of times. And that takes a lot of energy. So it's important to relax and rest and eat in a soothed manner so that your digestive system gets this kind of, I have enough energy to do this.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of people have had their gallbladder removed as if it's not important. What should they consider? Because I feel like people I've spoken to who've had it removed, they never get any directions of, you know, what to do afterward.
Okay, well, when we have our gallbladder removed, we mostly compensate for it really well. And most people who have their gallbladder removed, the liver secretes bile. It gets dumped into the common bile duct, and which kind of pouches out. And then when we eat fat, the liver and the pouch just kind of release it. And so most people do pretty well without doing anything. But there's a portion of people, maybe 20% of people, who don't seem to function well after they get their gallbladder out. And so there's a few things. One is Dr. Jonathan Wright, again, discusses about how he sees food sensitivities as one of the major contributors to gallbladder disease. So when I'm working with somebody who has what seem to be gallbladder issues, that's the first place I start, is working with their food and trying to figure out what foods are inflaming them and why they're having that issue. And that really helps. Also, if people are having problems, I will use an enzyme that is lipase-loaded. I'll use digestive enzymes that are swayed towards digesting fat better. And those seem to really help a lot. And people who have their gallbladder out but still have problems, they'll often have kind of loose stools. They'll still have kind of weird pains that can migrate around the body. They feel like their digestion doesn't work right when they eat anything that they have fat in. So that can be really helpful. I think also the umeboshi plums can be really helpful. I think the bitters also stimulate the production of bile. And then there are also lots of bile-producing foods like radishes and greens of all types. And then finally, the last thing is sometimes I'll supplement people with ox bile, and it's really bile from an ox. And people have been using that for, 50 or 100 years. And it works amazingly well. And you'll often find it in a digestive enzyme or on its own.
When else should people consider using digestive enzymes? Is it something that everyone should take or not?
I used to take them for years, and then I stopped taking them. So I think, first of all, there are different kinds of digestive enzymes. So there's ones that are actually dried pancreas from an animal. And I think that those ones, that you can get prescription enzymes. So for people with cystic fibrosis, they're routinely prescribed. They're often given to people with pancreatic diseases. I find them to be useful for people with diabetes or blood sugar regulation issues. And then there's enzymes that are grown, and they're grown usually a mold called Aspergillus niger, and there isn't the mold left in the enzyme, but that's how they manufacture it, because they actually grow the enzymes. And those, I think, they work better for issues that people have in the stomach. I use them a lot for people who have gas and bloating and irritable bowel syndrome. I'll use them for people who have yeast overgrowth or dysbiosis. And for people who just feel like they're not digesting their food properly. And again, back to constipation and diarrhea, they seem to kind of have a soothing effect on the gut motility. And so they seem to help with both constipation and diarrhea. And also, I'll use them for people who are really tired. They say, well, I eat all the right foods, but I feel tired all the time. We'll give them a try and see if they help them feel more energetic. Because as I said before, if you can't fully digest the food, then you're not going to get the energy and the benefits from it.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into probiotics a little bit. Should everyone take probiotics? What kind? I also love that you had a tip in your book that when traveling internationally, you should take it daily. So can you talk about all that a little more?
Yeah, let me just start by, when you're traveling internationally, take it daily. There are a lot of reports and some literature on the use of probiotics to prevent traveler's diarrhea. And Montezuma's Revenge and Shigella and all the kind of things that we pick up when we travel. And the reason why we do is not just that we drink the water, but the different microbes that are on the foods, the microbes that are in the soils that then get into the food, are different in different places. And also, we're more likely to pick up bacteria that we're not used to or parasites that we're not used to. And taking a probiotic can help kind of ramp up your immune system in a very gentle way that makes your body recognize these things and say, you know what, this is a dangerous stranger. Let's deal with it. And it's a very gentle way to kind of support your immune system when you're traveling. I'll often have people bring colostrum or transfer factor with them for the same reason, because they're IgG immunoglobulin boosters. And so they can be helpful. You know, when you're in a foreign environment, it's good to have some friends along with you who can help protect you. And so that's the first thing. And then the second thing is we're in our infancy, or maybe we're just walking right now in where the research is on probiotics. After they did the genome project, they found that we had between around 22,000 genes, but humans have all these microbes. So then they started doing the microbiome project, human microbiome project, and there's some great websites where you can look and listen to videos and understand more about it. And what we're starting to realize is that diet can affect the gut microbiome faster than anything else. So when people eat a lot of root vegetables and high-fiber foods and more vegetable plant-based diets that are like whole grains and root vegetables, beans, nuts, seeds, vegetables, what you start seeing is that there's a shift in the gut microbiome that seems to be a healthier shift because it's less inflammatory. And And so food is one way that we can affect it. And we never had refrigerators until very recently. And so we always ate cultured and fermented foods. But since we've had refrigerators in the American and global population, we put everything away. And after the World War II, we started getting more and more and more packaged foods. And the packaged foods, in order to sit in a package, they have to be inert, really. It's the life in food that gives us life. But you don't want your packaged foods to have a lot of life in them, because then they go bad. And so our predilection for eating a lot of packaged foods means that we don't get good gut microbes on our foods. So I think it's really important to think about eating condiment foods that are alive. So things like homemade pickles that you can make on your countertop really easily in a couple of days by just taking some salt water and putting some pickles in a jar and putting a grape leaf or two in there so they stay crisp, or putting some black tea in there and just letting them sit until they taste the way you want them. I'll often put in garlic and dill and pickling spices and things like that. So it's really easy to make your own. Or making your own sauerkraut, because most pickles and sauerkraut that we buy in stores have preservatives in it, so it's inert again. It's dead. But when you make your own or you buy a product that comes refrigerated, then you know that it's still alive if it doesn't have sodium benzoate in it, because some of the pickles and sauerkraut do have sodium benzoate or kimchi. So you want to look for something that doesn't have preservatives in it, or you want to make it yourself. Or think about eating cheese. Cheese is a great source of probiotic bacteria, or yogurt, or kefir, or kombucha. And so I'm a big fan of people actually eating foods that have life in them. And when we eat salads and we eat raw fruits and vegetables, they have these helpful, beneficial probiotic bacteria on them already that help modulate our immune function. So I would start with food. And then personally, I still take a probiotic supplement every day. Mm-hmm. And what I would look for is one that has a combination of different probiotic bacteria in it, mainly lactobacilli and bifidobacteria. There might be some strep in there. There might be some Saccharomyces boulardii in there. But looking for it, just kind of a broad spectrum. And when dosing probiotics, you want to think about who you are. If you're just really healthy, maybe all you need is what's in your food. If you have autoimmune disease, on the other hand, maybe you want to take 25 or 50 billion colony-forming units every day of your life. If you're on different medications that affect, or you've taken antibiotics recently, maybe you want to take 50 or even 100 billion colony-forming units of probiotics every day for a month or so after you stop taking antibiotics, just to kind of feed your good microbiome. And so, there are some people, I'll use a product that's just Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a yeast. And we know that Saccharomyces boulardii is a yeast that helps with diarrhea from all causes. There's over probably now 60 years of research on Saccharomyces boulardii that originally came out of a French pharmaceutical company. One of the common brand names is Florastor. So, there's other probiotics that are really soothing. So there's a probiotic that's very low potency, only has 3 billion colony-forming units of Lactobacillus plantarum. But I'll use that one for people who can't tolerate probiotics very well, but they need to be soothed because it's a very soothing strain of probiotics. So I might use that with somebody with inflammatory bowel disease. So, there's a lot that I could say about it, but, think about getting your probiotics from food sources whenever possible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, miso soup, another really good one. Miso, tempeh, olives from those olive bars.
And miso soup is really easy to make. You just get the paste and mix it with hot water.
Yeah, you get paste, you mix it with hot water, you can drink it like tea. Miso, a good quality miso, has over 150 different bacterial strains in it.
That's amazing. What are prebiotics, and does everyone need them?
Yes, we all need them. but do we need to take them as a supplement? No. What a prebiotic is it's a starch that comes in on food. So it comes in on things like asparagus and chicory and root vegetables and onions and garlic and beans and whole grains. And what it is it doesn't get digested by all of our digestive enzymes, but it gets digested by the bacteria that are in our digestive system. And as it does that, it creates things called short-chain fatty acids. And those short-chain fatty acids keep our colon really healthy. And so it's very important to eat foods that have these kind of prebiotic fibers in them. And they're a lot of the same foods that already have high fiber in them anyway.
We already discussed the microbiome a little bit, but some of the things that can go wrong that you mentioned, like candida, parasites, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, but one that I'm not as familiar with is what are biofilms? Can you explain those?
Oh, yeah. Biofilms are like the mucus that's in your nose, right? And what happens, mm-hmm. I wish I could draw it for everybody, but I'm going to try to explain it. Imagine that the inside of your small intestine looks like a towel, and on the towel there's all these little tiny loops, and on the little tiny loops are little tiny threads. The little loops are called the villi, and the little tiny threads are called the microvilli. And so with every villi, it's one cell, and it's called an enterocyte. And it has hundreds of little microvilli on it. And it's on the tippy tops of those little microvilli where we absorb lactose and where we absorb a lot of our nutrients right into the cell. The lining of that cell, those enterocytes, they're only one cell thick. And so on top of them, inside the lumen, which is inside the hose of the digestive tract, what we have is we have kind of a light mucus layer. And that mucus layer helps protect those villi and those microvilli against things that might be irritating to it, which is the same reason why we have a little bit of secretions and mucus in our vagina, why we have it in our nose, because it's protective. And everybody has these gut biofilms, but what can happen is when we have a parasite or we have yeast overgrowth or bacterial overgrowth, that mucus layer really thins out and it can't protect us anymore. And also one of the things that happens is that the parasites and the viruses and the fungi and the yeast and the bacteria get embedded into the mucus layer. So think about when you get a cold and your mucus gets really thick and your mucus has bacteria in it, and you know, it's so, but what happens is that we have a disordered gut biofilm, and it functions a lot like, I like to think of it as functioning like a corporation, or think about if a corporation, if everybody in the accounting department walked out and said, we're on strike, we're not going to work, people from other departments would pick up the slack until you could hire new accountants or work out a deal. And the gut microbiofilm is like that. Think of it as a corporation that has all these departments. And in all these departments, they all have different jobs. And their job is to survive. That's their job. And so it's very difficult sometimes to eradicate these biofilms. And we have companies who are making products that are designed to break through these biofilm layers. And personally, I know a lot of people clinicians who use these products all the time. And I've never recommended them to any of my clients because I don't think we know what we're really doing. And what I'll do instead is I'll do all the things I know. I'll try to upregulate your own immune system so it can recognize what's going on by giving things like lactoferrin or colostrum or transfer factor. I'll give people protein splitting enzymes called proteases to help upregulate the immune system. I'll give probiotics and probiotic-rich foods. And I try to do it by making us stronger so that we can recognize what's going on rather than trying to break down these biofilms. And I know it's just a little different than how a lot of people think about it, but I don't think we really know what we're doing yet.
Interesting. I know that you are big on foods to heal the digestive system. So what are some of the best foods to heal your gut, maybe for people with issues like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, IBD, some of those, and just in general?
Okay. So first, in general, my most favorite go-to food is soups, especially that have bone stocks or really good vegetable stocks like Magic Mineral Broth, which is one of Rebecca Katz's recipes that's easy to find on the internet. Or I think I have it posted at Access to Health Experts as well, and which is a free website where I have lots of different things posted. So bone broth have been used for over 100 years. There was research way back that it helped heal the digestive system. It's very soothing. I talked about things like licorice tea and okra. Licorice tea you want to be careful of because it can raise blood pressure. So if you already have high blood pressure, it's something I wouldn't probably recommend more than maybe a cup a day at the most, or eating licorice. But if your blood pressure is really low, eating some black licorice that's real licorice, like panda licorice, or drinking some licorice tea every day can be really useful. And then we have diets that are really helpful at correcting digestive issues. So some of the main diets, and you can look at their websites, would be the specific carbohydrate diet that was popularized by Elaine Gottschall, the gut and psychology syndrome diet called the GAPS diet that was popularized by Natasha Campbell McBride, and also the FODMAP diet, which is kind of the new kid on the block, which has been popularized by Sue Gibson and by Peter Gibson and Sue Shepherd from Australia. And then you've got also diets like Donna Gates' body ecology diet for people with fungal and yeast overgrowth. And, you know, different diets are going to work best for different people. But in general, I would say that a grain-free diet is very useful to people while they're healing, and also making foods really easy to digest. So for many people who have digestive issues, they already know that eating raw vegetables and salads just tears them up. So making soups and stews and things that you make in a crock pot or you cook for a long time, things that you find easy to digest, and don't eat things that don't make you feel good.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Do you have about 5 more minutes?
I do.
Okay. I just want to go over a little bit. So I wanted to talk about some of the issues I mentioned in the beginning where you wouldn't at first suspect a connection to digestion, but I'm just going to pick 2 of them. One, migraines, and the second one, ADD. So can we talk just a little bit more about things to look for with migraines? I just picked that one because someone just recently asked me about it, and does seem to be common. You know, a lot of people just can't get relief. So.
Okay, so migraines can be from so many different causes, and only one of them is digestive. And that's why working with somebody who's a good sleuth can really, or has a lot of experience, might be able to help you get down to the bottom of it. So many women experience migraines premenstrually or with their shifts in their hormones. And if you're somebody who experiences them that way, then I would say that there are 2 things that are really critically important. And one is making sure you have enough magnesium in your diet, because magnesium levels drop premenstrually. The other one is to make sure that you're eating small, frequent meals, because premenstrually and with changes in hormones, our blood sugar levels can fluctuate, which is, and both magnesium and fluctuating blood sugar levels are the two most common reasons why we get so grouchy and irritable sometimes before a menstrual cycle. So I would start there. I would make sure somebody's thyroid is working well. And I really like, and I talk about the work of Jean Monroe in digestive wellness and digestive connection, and also in digestive wellness for children, which is another book that I wrote. Jean Monroe is a physician in Great Britain in the UK, and she did food sensitivity testing on over 200 people with migraines and found that 100% of them had some sort of food sensitivity or environmental sensitivity. So I always look and clean up the diet and maximize and optimize magnesium and then see where and optimize blood sugar levels so that they stay even and then see where we are. And I think that leaky gut plays a big role also in, can play a big role in migraines. And then a thyroid imbalance can also play a big role. So I think those are some of the main things to just consider about migraines.
Mm-hmm. And then what about ADD and the digestive connection there?
So ADD, wow. So a lot of the kids who have ADD and autism also have digestive issues. And if we can clear up the digestive issues and balance that gut microbiome and also get it so that they're actually able to digest and utilize the nutrients that they take in, you can see sometimes really astounding changes. So I think leaky gut plays a huge role. I also know that dysbiosis plays a big role in these kids, so looking for infection. Inflammation plays a big role. And so we go back to the dig-in. And whenever you work with somebody from a kind of a functional medicine or functional nutrition perspective, you go back to the dig-in and you say for kids who have ADD or ADHD or for kids who are autistic, you go, okay, are they digesting their food? Do they have enough enzymes and hydrochloric acid? Do they have leaky gut? What does their balance of their gut microbiome look like? Is there inflammation? What's their immune system doing? And, you know, we do this for every single person. It doesn't matter what the diagnosis is. You come mm-hmm. back to this dig-in matrix, and you just start working it and going, well, based on what I know of this person, this is the first place to start. And so, you know, what I love about functional medicine is that it's not protocol-based, it's person-based. So we're always trying to work with a person and try to figure out what's best for this person at this moment in time.
That's wonderful. Aside from your books, Liz, where can people find more information about you online?
People can go to my website, which is innovativehealing.com. And if you're interested in getting a master's degree in nutrition, either on campus here in Maryland or online, you can go, or you already have a master's degree or you're a clinician and you just like 15 credits of nutrition so that you understand nutrition better and how to use it in your practice. We have a postmaster's certificate, and starting in January, we'll have a doctoral program in integrative and functional medicine at Maryland University of Integrative Health. So our website is muih.edu. And I also mentioned that I have, it's really an archive website, but I, like you, used to do interviews with a lot of people, and those interviews are all up to listen to or read at accesstohealthexperts.com, along with a lot of other materials.
Perfect. Don't tempt me again with more education. I just want to share a story really quickly. So I've been considering a master's degree for a long time. You know this, but I just right now just don't have the time to put toward that. But I went up to Liz maybe 2 months ago at that conference, and I said, I really want to get a master's. I don't know if I have time. And Liz, you just put me in my place and said, if you can't dedicate 20 hours a week to it, then don't do it. So I said, okay, not yet.
Yeah, not yet. If you,
not
I mean,
yet.
You really have to have the time. Going back to school is going back to school. You remember what being in college is like. And you really need to clear out your life so that it's your priority of, you know, one of the main things you're doing. A lot of our students are working full-time and they have families and, you know, so how do you balance all of that? And you really need to be able to clear out some space so that you really can, you know, have some quality of life while you're in school. I won't say it's
right.
probably your best quality of life, but it's some quality of life. And, you know, the other place where people can get a hold of me, if you're a nutritionist or a clinician and you really like kind of my approach, I offer advanced mentoring forums, and also I offer mentoring groups for people who are just starting to use this, dietitians, nutrition coaches, and people who say, I just really want to know more, but I don't really want to go back to school. I'd like something that's low stress. And I do those by webinars, and I'll be starting new groups in the fall.
Perfect. Well, Liz, thank you so very much. I really appreciate all of your work, all of your books. You really are the digestion expert. So thank you so much for taking the time today to join me and answer all my questions.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me on the show, Evelyn. It was a real pleasure.
For sure. You have a great day.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, next week I'm interviewing Dr. Lise Alschuler, author of 5 to Thrive, and we will be talking about cancer prevention as well as cancer recovery. Thank you so much for tuning in. See you next week.